Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We find that the Livestock Forage Disaster Program can potentially constitute a financial climate risk for the federal government. In the future, what we found is that by the 2070 to 2100 time period, annual aggregate average LFP payments may increase by more than 100% in 2022 dollars than the average between 2014 and 2022.
USDA's Economic Research Service with a recent Livestock Forage Disaster Program Impact Study. Aaron Rosensick is a researcher.
What we also found is that how drought is classified is really important for this financial climate risk of the program. So if how drought's classified, it changes over time or evolves to reflect changing climatic patterns, then the program constitutes a much smaller financial climate risk for the federal government.
This is Agriculture Today.
Pretty much sideways from where they've been over the last 2 to 3 weeks, not displaying any strength to jump to the high side out of most recent trading ranges.
Talking about current market movement in grains, Dan O'Brien is a Kansas State grain market economist.
On Thursday, on the 1st, the corn futures contract for March 24 closed at 447.5, and we've been around that same level for a few days, had closed below 440 for a little bit, so pretty much heading sideways, I think, until we get some confirmation of some either better or worse information in such things as the upcoming February the 8th, I believe, a USDA WASDE report, that then, you know, it seems that this is kind of where we're at. And for the new crop, Dees corn, 479 as opposed to 447.25. And in, where that's critical is that is in regards to crop insurance. I think we've entered now in February, the month where we're going to average daily closes of the December 2024 corn contract. That'll affect both corn and sorghum planting prices for revenue products for crop insurance. So it's an important time. And we starting out that at on day one at that 479 close. So we'll see where that goes. For wheat, we ended up and closed yesterday at 620.75. And again, after getting down to about 580, 590 thereabouts, one time in the last 2 weeks, we've come up out of that and now have apparently settled into something around 620, 630, 610 thereabouts. You know, and we look out the window here in western Kansas. We see pretty good weather. We've had moisture. I don't know what will change a lot until we get into breaking dormancy. Now, the weather's pretty warm, and that would have some folks be thoughtful about that and not wanting to get growth going and then have something come in latter part of February and into March. I'm sure our agronomic colleagues have talked about that or will with that risk. But as we sit right now, same scenario for wheat, pretty much challenging exports on the hard red side. And hard red spring had a little better week this last week than it had been, but we've struggled in the hard red side of hard red winter wheat side of the export ledger. And for soybeans, closed on Thursday at 12.03 and a quarter. New crop November at 11.85 and a half. And again, for soybeans, as well as for the feed grains, you know, that we're watching that November contract price daily closes to get some idea of what the crop insurance base levels are. And we actually had not too bad of an export week for the week ending January 25th. Again, 34, 35 million bushels, need a pace of about 25 to meet the USDA's projection. So we had that, really not too bad of news, but also a news story that came out that talked about some very, very low price soybeans from Brazil coming into the United States. So as you and I talked before we came on there, I don't know, unless there's follow through and it becomes a significant issue and there's a repeat, there's enough quantity to affect things. Is this a shot over the bow event to just remind markets not to get too high, although they certainly haven't been, or will this be an ongoing situation? We've talked about imports of European wheat into the U.S. and that we saw a little bit of a change in supply demand balance sheet. So the quantity is not that much, but the psychological impact and the threat of it happening certainly affected the wheat market, and we'll be watchful to see if that happens in the soybean market too.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The USDA's January 1st cattle inventory report places the total number of cattle and calves at 87.2 million head, consistent with trade expectations for a nearly 2% decline from a year ago, as the industry continues into a fifth consecutive year of contraction within the cattle cycle.
Dr. Jason Franken, an agricultural economist with Western Illinois University.
The report mostly confirms anticipated year-over-year declines across all inventory categories, with fewer beef cows than any time since 1961 and the lowest total inventory since 1951. As expected, all cows and heifers that have calved total 37.6 million head, also nearly 2% below last year, reflecting 2% fewer beef cows at 28.2 million head and just a slight drop in dairy cows at 9.4 million head. Similarly, beef replacement heifers are down about 1.5% from a year ago, while dairy replacement heifers are just fractionally lower. Overall, the inventory of all heifers weighing 500 pounds or more is also down about 1.5% compared to expectations for just less than a 1% decline. Bulls and steers weighing over 500 pounds are down less than 0.5% and more than 1.5% respectively. Only calves under 500 pounds at 2.75% lower really surprised analysts, coming in below the range of pre-report estimates. Lesser but still notable deviations from expectations include bulls over 500 pounds and the same weight other heifers category, which are both down by not quite 0.5% and 2% respectively, placing them near the upper end of pre-report estimates. While some of the other heifers may yet be bred as replacements depending on rains and forage development as the year moves onward, a number of these animals are feasibly destined for feedlots. Correspondingly, the nearly 1.5% drop in beef replacement heifers falls within widely ranging pre-report estimates, but is nearly twice as low as the average expectation of just 0.75% lower, supporting continued industry contraction. The calf crop at 33.6 million head, or 2% below the prior year, is, as expected, the lowest since 1940, which should be bullish for feeder calf prices in the near term and fed cattle prices down the line. The USDA reports the January 1st inventory of cattle on feed at 14.4 million head, 11.9 million of which are in feedlots with capacity in excess of 1,000 head, which is about 2% more than a year ago. Last December, these feedlots placed 1.7 million cattle on feed, or about 4% fewer than a year earlier, and marketed 1.73 million, or about 1% less. With steers and heifers on feed up 2.3% and 1.8% respectively, the ratio of heifers to steers is at almost 40%, remaining nearly as high as a year ago compared to around the low to mid-30s during much of the last expansion. This is again evidence that producers have yet to initiate expansion of the brood cow herd. In light of the smaller inventory numbers, beef production is anticipated to be 3.2% lower in 2024 than last year. Lower availability of beef is expected to constrain U.S. per capita consumption to about 56.5 pounds per person in 2024 compared to 58.1 pounds in 2023, or around 2.75% lower. Meanwhile, exports are expected to be 7.6% lower this year, which also reflects lower anticipated beef production and strong beef exports in recent years. Due to relatively strong demand and declining production, cold stocks of beef are already fairly low. While up 6% from the prior month, stocks of beef on December 31st are down 11% from a year ago. All things considered, cattle prices for 2024 will likely surpass last year's records. With the supply side seemingly set for higher prices in the coming year, much of the downside uncertainty hinges on maintaining demand and underlying concerns for the economy, inflation, and interest rates. Hence, if domestic or export demand falter, lower prices may be observed.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The Tax Relief for American Families and Workers Act restores tax provisions left out of the 2017 tax reform efforts. American Farm Bureau Federation Government Affairs Director Dustin Shearer says the legislation includes provisions that benefit farmers and ranchers.
The biggest of which is 100% expensing or bonus depreciation, which allows you to immediately write off investments into your business when you purchase equipment or build infrastructure. It's probably one of the most pro-growth policies that we can put in the tax code, and farmers lost the ability to buy new equipment under 1031 like-kind exchanges in the 2017 tax reform.
Shearer says it's important lawmakers make the fix now ahead of the 2025 tax cliff.
These provisions were only extended for a couple of years from 2017 when they changed. Others, like bonus depreciation, started to phase down. And so getting this done now, generally you can make tax policy retroactive for a year before you get too deep in the following year's filing season. And that's what this bill does. That provision and a couple others, including deductibility and the R&D expensing, retroactive to the beginning of 2023 before we get deep into this particular filing season.
Shearer encourages farmers and ranchers to reach out to their senators and urge them to pass this legislation.
Those things affect farmers and ranchers' bottom lines, especially in times of high costs and thin margins. Tell them your story and let them know that it is vital that they get this done.
Michael Clements, Washington.
So we move from the tax relief bill to the federal milk marketing order hearing, driven by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Chad Smith has more.
The American Farm Bureau Federation offered the final piece of testimony at the Federal Milk Marketing Order hearings. Danny Munch, an economist with the American Farm Bureau, talks about what the testimony covered.
American Farm Bureau Federation requested an emergency implementation of the switch back to the higher of Class 1 formula back in the 2018 Farm Bill. There is a stipulation that included a switch from the higher of Class 3 and 4 skim milk price to the average of Class 3 and 4 skim milk price. And what that's done in the recent years is smoothed the benefit between two prices. And in times where the price spread is less than $1.48, it benefits producers. But in periods where the spread is more than $1.48, it creates negative pool losses, which results in lower milk checks.
He says farmers have seen significant pool losses in recent years due to high spreads between the Class 3 and Class 4 prices.
In December 2023, we surpassed over $1 billion in pool losses related to the formula change. In November, that was $50 million alone. And in December of 2023, that was $38 million alone. So farmers are still feeling the pinch of the switch that occurred under the 2018 Farm Bill. We read a letter into the public hearing record requesting USDA to implement an emergency switch back to the higher of so that farmers don't face those pool losses for another month.
Munch says there's still a long way to go in the reform process.
This is only step 5 in a 12-step process. So we still have a lot of days left in this process. Stakeholders still have to submit post-hearing briefs. So we're looking at months and months until a chance for any changes for dairy farmers to see will come into fruition.
Farm Bureau says each month the process continues will open up farmers to more negative pool losses due to the average of Class 1 mover formula. For more information, go to fb.org. Chad Smith, Washington.
Thanks, Chad. You're listening to our comprehensive look at agribusiness news, markets, and weather. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
With an El Nino, some of you are still asking, where is it?
At the recent Cattle Facts Ag Outlook Seminar, part of CattleCon 24, Matt Makins, a meteorologist with Makins Weather in Denver.
Classically, for Texas, out across the Southwest, it's not much of a factor until January, and it lasts until April, and then it diminishes. The green on the map, that's your wet favorite areas. It goes up into Nebraska. Drier areas, Pacific Northwest, around the Great Lakes, Ohio, and the Tennessee Valleys. That's classic. That would be a textbook picture. This one hasn't exactly been textbook, but it's close. So where have we improved things so far? That's a drought map. Blues, soggy. Reds and yellows, dry. Where have we improved? Texas. The West. Parts of South Florida. Moving into Central Florida. Where have we seen the drought get worse? Around the corn areas. Corn's going to start off sluggishly, but we will improve that as moisture returns as we transition back to La Nina. Globally, the green circles on the map, they're areas where this event, this El Nino event, has helped the industry. The southern states of the U.S., not quite into Mexico just yet. South America, we've seen some improvement in southern Brazil and northern Argentina to the drought there. Where has the drought flatlined or gotten worse? No help has come to Canada. Well, the prairies. Eastern Canada is pretty soggy, pretty wet. Australia, That's an area where normally El Nino brings in a lot of drought. This El Nino, not very strong. The drought's kind of there, but not as bad as it has been in the past. As we quickly flip back to La Nina, Australia reverses the trend and becomes wet again.
Now, Makins is suggesting the end of El Nino, return to La Nina, and says,
we love talking about sea surface temperatures. That theory has not changed. That's the main basis of our forecast. Find me areas of ocean that are cooler or warmer than average, and you're getting that punch in the atmosphere. Then you got to look, is the atmosphere responding to that punch, or does it have strong grabs that doesn't feel it? In this case, strong abs, it's not really feeling it. But we compare that to the atmosphere. And then we start whittling this list of potential contender years down and thinking, well, was the drought similar then as it is today? Is the amount of snow on the ground the same? All these factors go together like gears in an engine. There's a bunch of garbly-goop on that chart right there. But that is the basis of the forecast you're about to see. It's statistical strengths to previous years to where this year is headed. And we can combine those years by season, change the years, the weighting of the years, just like changing gears in an engine. So here's your forecast. This is the outlook for temperatures for the next several seasons. We'll talk about the rest of the year in just a moment. And I'll make these maps bigger so it's a little easier to understand. But the trend here from February through July, you can see the trend. Blues indicating colder than normal. Reds are hot. Our most immediate impact for the southern states will be cold. We've got another surge of it coming later this month. As we go forward in time, you can see the trend or the progression in temperatures. Everybody warms up.
Matt Makins, Makins Weather in Denver. And this is Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The financial position of Cattle Facts remains strong.
At the recent Cattle Facts Ag Outlook Seminar, Iowa producer, president of Cattle Facts, Nick Hunt.
We remain focused on developing and delivering more customized solutions to fit your specific needs. We continue to build more tools that enable customers to measure and ultimately manage their risk with a higher probability of success. This will be the focus for several years to come. CattleFax has invested heavily in advancing our databases in the U.S. and globally. We have improved our research capabilities and have built better analytical tools and models to assist you in making more timely decisions. The board of directors play a crucial role in shaping the long-term plan for CattleFax. If you have thoughts or ideas, please communicate them to your regional representatives, Randy Block, or your analysts. Your input is highly valued. CattleFax is here to serve your business needs, and we welcome your feedback. Staff continuity has been one of the single most important factors for CattleFax to be able to adapt and respond to customer business needs. I would like to recognize Troy Appelhans. Troy has been with CattleFax for 18 years and has done an excellent job serving customers in many regions. Kevin Good just finished his 42nd year, and Mike Murphy, our chief operating officer, just celebrated his 28th anniversary. The retention of dedicated staff is one of the key reasons CattleFax has been successful. We are proud of the team of analysts that we have assembled. They all have one major goal, and that is to serve you, the customer, in the best manner possible. I would invite each of you to come by our booth that is in the trade show and meet our team. These last several years have been volatile. The price swings from lows to highs and highs to lows have been rapid and cover a lot of ground. In 2023, the full range of Fed cattle prices was $33 per hundred. That's $450 per head. And the feeder cattle and calves saw an $80 swing in prices ranging this past year. These types of swings are becoming more commonplace and are likely to continue in this global marketplace. This amplifies the need to manage risk and protect equity.
And on the heels of the Cattlemen Feed Report, Jason Franken, Western Illinois University, adds,
feedlot and packing capacity relative to the availability of cattle to place on feed support quarterly forecasts for steady to higher slaughter share prices, averaging 179.77 a hundredweight, 185.75 a hundredweight, 183.01 a hundredweight, and 196.36 a hundredweight, respectively, for the coming year. These forecasts reflect current estimates of low cattle supply and a likely prolonged return to industry expansion compared to the last cycle, as heifer retention has not yet begun nationwide.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Farm Bureau's annual convention concluded with a session on policy priorities for 2024. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall says the Farm Bill is the top issue.
We stressed the importance of getting the new Farm Bill done and how urgent it is to get it done now. Labor was another hot topic, especially around stabilizing the wage rate and ensuring that we can make progress on year-round labor workers. Another takeaway was the artificial intelligence and the need to seize the opportunities related to AI while ensuring that farmers' data is protected. A fourth takeaway relates to contract poultry growers. Our delegates called for a fair pay structure and more transparency among poultry companies.
Duvall says the policies begin at the grassroots county level.
Then they rise up to the state level at their state conventions where they're discussed, and then it moves on to the national level where we finish that debate at our national convention. This year we had 350 farmers and rancher delegates from all across the country. And I want to also share an important point. We surveyed them, and 99% of them are family farms, and two-thirds of them come from small to medium-sized farm, and that's based on USDA classifications. We really do represent a diverse agriculture in America.
More than 80 speakers and 4,500 registered attendees were at the event this year.
We had a great convention here in Salt Lake City. The energy level was high among our attendees, and they are very optimistic about the future and taking on new frontiers. We're all looking forward to getting together again next year in San Antonio, Texas. We invite every listener to join us. We want them to mark their calendars now for January 24th through January 29th for the AFEF convention.
Farm Bureau and partner organizations Sunday announced Together All at the American Farm Bureau Federation Convention in Salt Lake City, Utah. Jessica Cabrera, American Farm Bureau Federation Managing Director of Member Engagement, says Together All is a new mental health resource for rural America.
Together All is a safe, anonymous, online peer-to-peer community. It is accessible 24/7, and it is moderated around the clock by licensed clinicians. Farmers and their family members who are age 16 or older can simply set up a profile that assigns an anonymous username. Then they can access a global network of peers who can listen to them and support them.
Cabrera says there are many partner organizations that came together to make this happen.
So this resource is being launched by the Farm Family Wellness Alliance. The Alliance is a coalition of organizations that include Farm Foundation, American Farm Bureau Federation, Farm Credit, CoBank, Iowa Farm Bureau, DHS, Land O'Lakes, National Farmers Union, 4-H, FFA, Agriculture Future of America, Together All, and Personal Assistance Services.
She adds farmers, ranchers, and their families face some unique challenges when it comes to mental health.
Farming is very challenging, and often farmers are living in isolation or facing a lot of stigma about reaching out for help. And taking that first step to reach out is often the hardest step to take. They'll think that it is a sign of weakness to reach out for help, when in reality, reaching out for help is a sign of strength. So at this time, having an online anonymous peer-to-peer community is a way for farmers and their families to be able to onboard themselves to the continuum of taking care of themselves.
Visit farmstateofmind.org to find this resource and others. Michael Clements, Salt Lake City.
I'm Tony St. James. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Various ag and rural-oriented organizations, private businesses, and nonprofit groups continue to expand available rural mental health resources to communities and individuals. For instance, the recent announcement of the Farm Family Wellness Alliance and
free access to counseling for farmers and ranchers and those in rural America.
Terry Moore represents the American Farm Bureau Federation, one of several partners within the alliance. Their new platform, found at www.farmfoundation.org/resources, provides anonymous online mental health and well-being services, and as important, points to local resources in rural communities. She acknowledges,
one of the challenges in the mental health arena is that often we have national hotlines, but those counselors may not understand rural America. Life is very different in rural America, and so the psychology of helping someone in crisis in rural America is different, and that too is part of what we have been working to achieve.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.